Here on Stolen Lives, we discuss brutal and heartbreaking crimes against children. Themes may include child murder, torture, and sexual, domestic, and child abuse. I do try my best to remain respectful for the babies in these stories and leave out unnecessary details that honestly, none of us need to know to understand the frustration of why and how this ever happened. However, if you find any of these themes triggering, this podcast may not be for you. Listener discretion is advised. This week's episode is a listener suggestion. Thank you to Kristen for bringing Anne's story to my attention. For anyone who knows me outside the podcast, my interest in true crime definitely leans towards cold case missing person stories. The unanswered questions, the unknown. How anyone could go missing for decades with no sign, just like someone has vanished in thin air. It is haunting and baffling and I cannot let go, hence why the Beaumont children are one of my pet cases, the one I'm always reading up on and researching for breaks in the story. While researching Anne's story, however, it seems Anne is forever connected to another little girl who went missing from Salem, Oregon in April of 1978. A little girl who looked hauntingly like the missing seventh grader, who went missing in similar circumstances. And only one man has ever been suspected in their disappearances. A sex offender who changed his identity, sold his car and then suicided in the months that followed. This is Anne and Stephanie's stories. Corvallis, Oregon, April 17th, 1978. It was the day of the March of Dimes Walkathon, a charity fundraiser to raise money and awareness for families of children with birth defects. Like with all walkathons, there is a predetermined route, with set check-in points for bathroom breaks, to drink some water, and to make sure no one is cheating and cutting corners. The March of Dimes Walkathon was a distance of around 20 miles, starting at First Street, going along the bike path near Williamette and Mary Rivers, before looping at 26th Street and then heading back. This was a super popular walkathon that the children in the area took pride in. It was a bit of a competition who could raise the most money for charity. 12-year-old Anne Marie Ellenwood and her friends were no exceptions, lining up to join the crowd for their third year running. Anne Ellenwood was a seventh grader at Highland View Junior High School, where she was a popular and well-liked student by both teachers and her peers. Her smile matched her personality, bright and friendly. Anne would be described as a mini version of her mother. Both had auburn hair, big brown eyes and gorgeous freckles. Anne was preparing for her 13th birthday on May the 1st, and she would not stop talking about the party she was planning for all her family and friends. It was maybe around a quarter of the way through the walk that Anne's feet started to hurt. She made the rookie error of wearing new shoes for a long walk. At 1 p.m, Anne sat down on a park bench by the bike path near Mary River. She told the two friends she was with to go ahead without her, that she would meet them on their way back around at the checkpoint at Gill Coliseum, about a mile and a half away, and then they could finish the walk together. This would be the last time her friends would see Anne. The volunteers at that particular checkpoint never reported seeing Anne there that afternoon. Anne would also not turn up for her afternoon job delivering the evening edition of the Gazette Times newspaper, a job that in the year she had been responsible for the paper route, she never missed once. When Anne failed to show for her paper route as normal, her parents were alerted, and at 5:15 p.m, Anne was reported missing to the Corvallis Police Department. The search for the missing 12-year-old began immediately. Corvallis is a small town where everyone knew everyone, so when a child is missing, it is almost personal to the police officers involved. The whole community wanted to find Anne. In the days that followed, an intensive air, land and water search was launched. Dive teams searched the Mary River. Local law enforcement and Benton County search and rescue members walked the area with search dogs. Pilots scanned the air. No sign of Anne could be found. Deflated, then Assistant Police Chief Kenneth Burright told the waiting news media, quote, "She's just gone," unquote. Volunteers and other walkathon attendees were interviewed, and the same person of interest was mentioned by a number of witnesses. This week's story is sponsored by BetterHelp. Depending where you are in the world right now, you are either gearing up for summer and social season, or bunkering down for winter and recharging your social battery. Either way, there are challenges. It's easy to ignore how we are feeling when we are meeting others' expectations at social gatherings. But are you taking time for you? Therapy can give you that self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain all your energy or battery, so to speak. I am a massive proponent of therapy. I think it is something everyone should do, and not necessarily wait until something is wrong, but it's also a good maintenance tool. A therapist is also great to just check in with to make sure you're still on the right path and not overloading yourself, which I know I'm great at. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suitable to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/stolen today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, help.com/stolen. Eyewitnesses reported seeing Anne on the bike path near the Pioneer Park ball field, just across from Highway 34, only metres from the Coliseum checkpoint where she promised her friend she would be. Anne was seen talking to a man with a small dog, next to a Ford pickup truck that was maroon or red. It is mentioned in contemporary news articles as both. And the truck was pulling a small white teardrop-shaped camp trailer. The man was described as being Caucasian, aged in his late 20s, a stocky build with shaggy reddish-brown or light-brown hair. Some eyewitnesses also mentioned the man had a moustache and a gruff voice. Those who reported his voice said so because they heard this man tell Anne he was the chief of police. One witness the police thought would break the case right open was a young girl who also encountered this man that day. A man matching the same description as the man seen with Anne approached her and asked if she would put his dog in the trailer for him. Why he couldn't do this himself, I don't know. Well, I do know he wanted to abduct this little girl, but I digress. This girl obviously felt uncomfortable but didn't want to upset the man. She simply threw the dog into the trailer and she ran away. Given the multiple witness sightings and the little girl all identifying the same man and vehicle, police were confident this was the man they wanted to talk to. Their suspect's description was circulated to news media as the police waited for tips to lead them to their missing girl. However, 4 days later, the investigation was no further ahead. And then everyone's worst fears are realised. Another little girl disappears. April 19, 1978. 11-year-old Stephanie Ann Newsom was finished her school day at Walker Junior High before she headed out on an after-school job, going door-to-door in West Salem, Oregon, delivering the newspaper publication Adweek to the local subscribers. This was actually her older brother's newspaper route, but for reasons I couldn't find in any of my research, he was unable to go that afternoon. So Stephanie offered to step in to earn some extra pocket money. Walker Junior High was very close to the Newsom family home on Lavona Drive. In fact, the only thing separating Stephanie's home from the school grounds was a small wooded area with several walking paths that was well travelled by kids walking to and from school. That afternoon, Stephanie used these paths to walk to her route. Eyewitnesses would later report seeing Stephanie not long before 6 p.m., walking along the path headed to her home empty-handed, seemingly having completed her newspaper route. When Stephanie didn't return home by 6 that evening, her parents went out to look for her. They searched the neighbourhood in the wooded area between their home and the school grounds. After about a half an hour later and with no sign of their daughter, Stephanie was reported missing to Salem Police. By 7 p.m, police had organised an official search over the same area her parents had only an hour earlier. Dozens of volunteers were in attendance to show their support of the Newsoms. Local officers worked throughout the night, even after their shifts were over, to try and find the missing girl. However, it was clear this was another abduction, that Stephanie was taken only metres from the safety of her home. And this theory was supported by a witness sighting. A teenage boy came forward and told the police he saw a man grab a girl who matched Stephanie's description and took her into the bushy area behind the school. The teenager described the men as being Caucasian, aged in his late 20s, stocky build with longish light brown hair. Sounds familiar. Another witness later reported seeing a dirty white sedan with a loud exhaust passing by with a girl he recognised as being Stephanie in the passenger seat. Police did not give up on their search for Stephanie. They pleaded to the public for their assistance to identify their suspect. That was until 8 days after Stephanie was last seen. A grim discovery was made in a field next to the Ankeny Wildlife Refuge, about 15 miles south of the Newsom family home. April 27, 1978. Farmer Jack Humphrey was preparing to fertilise the grass seeds. As he made his way over to his property, he spotted a pair of blue jeans underneath some bush. He immediately knew this was a human body. Jack had just discovered the partially clothed body of 11-year-old Stephanie Newsom. The medical examiner determining this little girl had been raped and strangled using a narrow rope. Now something of interest. Only days earlier, police received a tip that a man was overheard in a bar discussing Stephanie's disappearance, and he believed the missing girl's body would be found in a field about 8 miles south of Salem, and she would be without her tights that she was wearing underneath her jeans. Now, when Stephanie was found, this piqued the investigator's attention with just how close this bar patron was with his predictions. Stephanie was found without her tights she was wearing underneath her jeans. But police couldn't find the tipster or the alleged psychic patron, so this lead went nowhere. After Stephanie was found, the communities were in a panic, worried about the safety of their own children. Was there a serial killer out there preying on innocent children, walking in what was previously a low-crime county? Because Anne and Stephanie's abductions were not the first in recent times in Oregon. February 1978. A 12-year-old intellectually disabled girl was abducted from a playground just south of Corvallis by a man driving a white and red Volkswagen. The girl was raped and beaten but managed to escape her attacker. She hid in some nearby bushes until the attacker gave up and left, allowing the girl to seek help at a nearby house. The issue here, though, because of the girl's disabilities, she really had trouble communicating what happened and describing her attacker. But she was able to say two words to the police. Bad cop. Now remember back to that sighting of Anne talking to the man on the day she went missing. The witness reported hearing the man telling Anne he was the chief of police. I don't think this was a coincidence here. And then in March 1978, 16-year-old Karen Whiteside was abducted while walking to a friend's home in Eugene, Oregon. Her body was later discovered at Fairfield Elementary School. And like Stephanie, Karen had been raped and strangled. To quell the fears of parents, Oregon schools took precautionary measures like locking their doors during school hours. Children were no longer able to walk to and from school, only being able to take the bus or being dropped off and picked up at the school gates by their parents. Children were given talks by their teachers about precautions they could take to keep themselves safe. Precautions like avoiding secluded areas and not approaching or talking to strangers. To record license plate numbers in the dirt with sticks or rocks if they felt uneasy at any time. And this is still an excellent lesson to teach children today. My 12-year-old daughter takes a bus to and from school. She walks to the bus stop and home again. And she knows that if a car seems to be following her, to remember as much of the license plate number as possible. And then go to the closest house and let them know a car is making her feel unsafe. To walk away from the curb and closer to the houses as possible. So being grabbed by someone in a car is that much more difficult. To stay on more populated streets and not take shortcuts in isolated and secluded areas. And then only days after Stephanie was found, there was another abduction. 7-year-old Stacey Woolmuth vanished after leaving her classroom at West Grisham Elementary School to use the bathroom. The following day, Stacey was found cold and crying in a wooded area near the Columbia River. She had been severely beaten and sexually assaulted. Police had their work cut out for them, unsure if they were dealing with one serial offender or multiple perpetrators. Investigators were working around the clock to find the person or persons responsible. And then a promising lead was received in Anne's disappearance. Two people came forward to report they knew someone who owned a red Ford pickup truck and a small white camper trailer, that he owned a small dog, that he matched the physical description of the suspect down to a T. And on the day of Anne's disappearance, he told the two tipsters he was headed to Pioneer Park, the exact location Anne was last seen. The man being 42-year-old Earl Fred Chambers, and police wanted to talk to him. Chambers was a convicted sex offender, having previously been charged with sexual assault and assault of young women in California. And in early 1978, he was released from prison after serving a sentence on an assault with force conviction. After his release, Chambers moved to Willamette Valley and started working as a roofer, living in his camp trailer. Police brought Chambers in for questioning, and it seemed he had changed his appearance. He had shaved off his mustache. He had cut his hair very short and dyed it dark brown. He looked like a completely different person. This was all very suspicious to police. They interrogated Chambers, and he denied any involvement in Anne's disappearance. However, he agreed to take part in a lineup for the little girl who was involved in the attempted abduction the day Anne was taken. Now, unfortunately, I would say because Chambers' appearance was so different than it was on the day she had her interaction with him, but she was unable to identify him as the person who attempted to abduct her. Police did not let this setback deter them from considering Chambers their prime suspect in Anne's disappearance and Stephanie's abduction and murder, if not the other abductions and murders in surrounding areas. The only sticking point was the change in vehicle description between Anne and Stephanie's abduction. However, the reason for this would soon become clear. It wasn't only his appearance Chambers had recently changed. May 7th, 1978. Chambers left his red Ford pickup truck at a car dealership to be sold on consignment before purchasing a white Ford Torino. May 29th, 1978. Police were issued with a warrant to impound Chambers' camper trailer and to serve him with papers to appear before the Benton County Grand Jury on June 6, 1978, to answer questions about Anne's disappearance. But before this could happen, the Linn County Sheriff's Office discovered he had suicide off of a remote logging road southeast of Lebanon. Chambers left no note confessing to what he may or may not have done. Chambers' cause of death was determined to be carbon monoxide poisoning. He was found underneath the rear exhaust pipe of his Ford Torino. After this point, the investigation went cold. Chambers' trailer was forensically examined and hair was found inside that is believed to have belonged to Anne. The hair was tested for DNA in 2005, but the results were inconclusive. Now retired lead investigator James Miller believes that if the crimes happened today, they would have already been solved. Quote, "I don't think it would have taken long to resolve it. I think good science is making it harder to be a serial killer." Unquote. As of the time of this recording, Earl Fred Chambers remains the prime suspect for the disappearance of Anne Ellenwood and the abduction and murder of Stephanie Newsom. The last update in the case I could find was after the reinvestigation began, 2015. A tip led investigators to a well in Polk County where Anne's remains were rumoured to be, but the search turned up empty. Anne Ellenwood has also been considered for a number of Jane Does found since she went missing, including Princess Doe, Walker County Jane Doe, and Shotgun Jane Doe, all of which she has been tested for using familial DNA. Unfortunately, Anne has not been a match to any of these unidentified does. Anne's disappearance remains open and filed with the Corvallis Police Department under homicide with unknown victim location, where it will remain until Anne is found. At the time of her disappearance, Anne Ellenwood was 12 years old. She was 5'2" and 95 pounds, with auburn hair, brown eyes and facial freckles. Erin was last seen talking to a man with a small dog next to a red or maroon Ford pickup truck, hauling a white teardrop camp trailer near the Marys River. If Erin was still alive today, she would be 59 years old. If you have any information regarding the disappearance and presumed murder of Erin Ellenwood, please contact the Corvallis Police Department on 541 766 6924. Erin's disappearance is considered connected to that of the murder of 11-year-old Stephanie Newsom 2 weeks later. If you have any information regarding the murder of Stephanie Newsom, please contact the Salem Police Department on 503 540 2348. If you have your own thoughts and theories on the case we discussed today, or any case we talk about on Stolen Lives, please search Stolen Lives on Facebook. Like the page so you don't miss an episode and join the discussion group to talk about your thoughts and theories. You can also talk to us on Twitter, search lives_stolen, or on Instagram, Stolen Lives Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would appreciate it if you share this episode on your social media of choice and subscribe and leave a positive review on your podcast app. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Ali. Hosting and production was also by me, Ali. Music is by Mayu.